I feel for our, you know, we have these analysts and GAs and QC roles, and they're extremely valuable, especially in a time like this. But last week we prepared for three different opponents. You know, last Monday we were putting the finishing touches of our game plan on for Vandy when we got the call. We transitioned to game plan for Florida on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then looked like that wasn't going in the right direction. And then on Friday evening got the word that we're, you know, going to prepare for Kentucky. So, you know, we had to really shift our mindset three different times. You know, now fortunately for us, we never instilled or installed any of those plans with our players because we were working on ourselves. But it was a challenge for our support staff to get it right. And, you know, again, Kentucky has a tremendous defense. They've got a unique scheme that we have not seen before. And this will be the first time that, as a quarterback, Connor's had to face this much coverage. So it's a tremendous challenge and one that we have to really work on.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Thursday, October 22nd, 2020. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady now joined by our college football insider, Coach Gary Barnett. Coach, good morning. How are you?
I'm well, Stephen. You guys doing all right? Keeping safe?
You know what we are. We're doing very well. Thank you very much for asking. Hopefully you and your family are doing well too. And we're always happy to talk football with you. And you heard Eli Drinkwitz talking there about now that everything's settled, at least for now, with the schedule. They have Kentucky in front of them, and they're hosting this game in Columbia. And look, everyone was thrilled with the win against LSU. But Coach, this would be a really big win for Mizzou, because Kentucky, boy, that was Barry Odom's nemesis. Kentucky has won five in a row in this series against Mizzou. I think Kentucky, last time I saw it, was favored by 5.5. They're coming off a dismantling of Tennessee, and Mizzou has some extra time to prepare after beating LSU. So what do you think of this matchup and maybe the importance of it for Mizzou's football program trying to end this losing streak to Kentucky?
Well, I don't put, you know, ending the losing streak, and as far as the program goes in Kentucky, I don't see much. You know, I you know, it's an important game. They're fun. Everybody wants to win. But, you know, this isn't going to stall out any growth that Eli Drinkwitz is having with that program and where they're going to go. It's 2020. We're just so happy to even have football. And we have to adjust, just like Eli said. I mean, three different opponents, but you know, they have so much support staff anymore that they can do that. Those guys, they don't have anything else to do, so you know, that's what they get paid for. So I don't think that's a big deal, but it's just different than what we're all used to. And I think this game against Kentucky is just, it's the next step. It's the next game they get to play. It's the next step in Connor Bazelak's development. You know, Missouri's got to, they've got to, if they're going to win this game, and really very many more, they just got to get better on defense. And, you know, they're moving the ball decently, and they're putting some points on the board, but giving up 38 points a game, you just can't do that in that league and go very far. So, just a good opportunity to play a good football team, a team that's really good on defense, and that's how they've won. They've dismantled people, like you said. Defensively, they're only giving up 20 a game, which in today's football world, that makes you one of the best defenses in the country. So, this is a tough game for Missouri, and I think that they're just happy to play, and it's another step. It's another game everybody gets to watch, and it's another game that Eli gets to experience what happens in the SEC.
And look, the defense did play very poorly in that game against LSU, but they came up with a goal line stand. Can the confidence that they gained from winning that football game the way they did, can that help them? Because confidence is obviously very important. I'm sure they would have been extremely down had they ended up losing that game and not getting that stop. But can they build on that defensively, considering that they came through and not many people thought they would?
Absolutely, you know, because that's what those kids see. Those players, they think about those two great plays there at the end, the two knockdown passes and the goal line stand. That's how they remember the game. You and I, especially when I look at it as an analyst, I'm going, holy smokes, they gave up 40 some odd points, you know, and still won. You know, we look, and I look at, as a coach, I would look at all the issues that were there defensively, and that's what I've got to get fixed. The players, they're just happy to win a game like that, and that's how they see it, and that's how they remember it. So, yeah, that's a confident group. I mean, it's a lot more confident than it was before the game, and they don't look at it the same way. So, sure, I think that carries over a lot.
What do you think happens here? Like I said, Kentucky is favored by 5.5.
Oh, yeah, I think it's probably – I think 5.5 I think Kentucky wins by more than that. I think Kentucky's a really good football team. They should be undefeated. You know, really, they should have beaten Auburn, had a great chance to beat Auburn. They had a showboating penalty or incident. They certainly should have won the other game. So they're in great shape, yeah. And so, I mean, that's a good football team, and they're getting better. And the one thing that they can do that nobody else is doing in that league this year is play defense.
That's right. And, you know, they had their issues against Auburn and Ole Miss, but the last two games. They give up 2 points to Mississippi State and only 7 points to Tennessee. So that defense is rolling right now. Let's bring Nate Bucati in the conversation to talk a little Sunflower Showdown. Nate, take it away.
Well, Coach, there's a few different things to ask you about with this, but the first one, we've spent some time playing some sound bites from some K-State players that are local kids that grew up pretty close to Lawrence, Kansas, closer to Lawrence even than Manhattan, who were not highly touted kids, but K-State got on them early and, you know, got them to go to K-State, and they've blossomed into really good players and developed into really good players, and they basically said, yeah, I was a huge KU fan growing up, but they weren't as interested in me. They didn't show me as much love, and they still have a chip on their shoulder about it. I'm curious what your thoughts are on when you're in a state like Kansas and you know you can't just depend on your in-state recruits, you got to go to Texas and places to get talent, but how important is it still to be able to get players like that and make them a part of your program the way K-State has been able to do and Kansas has been unable to do over the last 10 years or so?
Well, the key is, it's taking players that are gonna from your state that aren't highly touted, aren't recruited, that develop. And you know, you can take two kinds. You can take the ones that do develop, and you're smart as anything. And you can take the ones that don't develop, and now all of a sudden you got a bunch of guys that'll get you beat. So it comes down to more of a feel and a science than anything else. And that's always sort of been true, Nate, through the history of Kansas. Is Kansas State has taken some in-state players, enough in-state players to allow them to keep growing and create that image that they have out there, and Kansas doesn't take that many, and so it's been that way forever probably. And it's just the way it happens in states that are sparsely populated and don't have a great number of players. Colorado was much the same way, not quite as extreme as KU, but Kansas State, it's just that's what happens. And those kids develop, and they did want to go to KU because they were close, but they didn't get recruited, so they do feel that way, and that gives them a little extra juice for this game. And it's just part of the game. It's part of what happens when you're in states like that.
Well, and when you say always been that way, I mean, I pretty much Bill Snyder was there for so long that it does certainly feel that way because Bill Snyder was always great at it. KU was good at it when they had Mark Mangino, who was a Bill Snyder disciple. And that's right. About the only time they've been good at it here in recent history. And I'm curious, I'm sure it's a little bit of both, but when you're putting together a staff, is it about doing the work to properly identify which kids can develop, or is it more credit to just being able to develop those kids the way the K-State has?
Well, it's a little bit of both, and it depends on the attitude of the head coach. And I'll give you an example. I was a high school coach in Colorado, and I was a small college coach in Colorado. So when I became the head coach of Colorado, I said, look, we're going to recruit Colorado first. And I made every one of our coaches have a part of the state so that they started feeling like they're part of the state. And so that was my approach. And all I'm saying is that the head coach will take that approach. He will make that decision. And if he decides that we're going to take some kids from Kansas, everybody's going to be a part of recruiting Kansas. We're going to make sure they feel like they're at home when they're on our campus, the high school coaches, et cetera, then I think you can get that done. But and then once you get them there, you got to have a staff and a situation where they can develop. A lot of it's luck. You know, but it's finding the guys that are not early developers, they're late developers, and being able to identify them. And that goes with having sort of a network throughout the high schools in the state that you start, the coaches and coaches from other schools will say, you know what, this guy isn't quite ready yet, but this guy down at so-and-so high school, he's going to be a really good player. And just sort of networking there. And it takes some time to build that up. And, you know, Les certainly hasn't had the time to do it. Bill did. And Kleiman coming in from a very similar situation, sparsely populated state, knows the drill and just was able to step right into those shoes.
All right, Coach, what about the game? K-State favored by 19.5.
I don't think that's enough. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I just, you know, KU's just, you know, now with Williams leaving, you know, they just, you know, their numbers are just really, you know, really struggling in so many ways. You know, their points against, points for, you know, they're just not able to do a whole lot on offense now. And defensively, you know, giving up the kind of points that they're giving up, you know, 45 points a game. It just doesn't bode well when you put all the other things that you and I were talking about there a minute ago.
Coach Gary Barnett is our guest. Boy, here is a very interesting game. Really looking forward to watching this one at 2:30 on Fox. Number 17, Iowa State, and number 6, Oklahoma State. Both teams undefeated in the conference. Oklahoma State's favored by 3.5 in Stillwater over Iowa State. I can't wait to watch this one. Coach, what do you think?
I don't think that's enough points. I think that, Oklahoma State, 9 points a game is all they're allowing. And, again, right now, with nobody playing defense, teams that do have a defense have a real edge. And 30 points a game for OSU. Now, they don't have a quarterback. They don't know who they're going to play with at quarterback. But still, they can run the ball on you. And Iowa State's solid, but they're giving up a lot of points as well. I just think that in Oklahoma State that Oklahoma State is maybe the best team in the league if they can settle the quarterback situation.
Coach, there's some Big Ten football all of a sudden.
Yeah, how about that?
Hey,
what? And right off the bat, I mean, boy, back in the day, this would have been a heck of a game, Nebraska against Ohio State, but Ohio State's 26-point favorite. But how do you know? Like, I'm curious. We saw a lot of crazy results the first week of college football this year, and we saw teams like K-State and Iowa State lose games that we thought, oh man, this is a bad sign for the Big 12. Both of those teams have rebounded incredibly well. How do you know what to expect from these teams in the Big 10, considering that, you know, they haven't played all year?
Well, the one thing you know is Ohio State's Ohio State. And I don't care what they have, you know, a group of four teams, the best team, best players in the country. So 26 points, you know, really it's hard not to take Nebraska and getting 26 points. But I don't know what's going to happen there. Ohio State has wanted to play. They wanted to prove themselves here. They want to get in the playoff picture. They have a lot of things going in their favor. Gives them a bigger edge than that, or right at 26. But, you know, the game I'm interested in is Minnesota and Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see where Harbaugh is going. I think Minnesota's really a good football team. I think that's just a three-point spread or something like that, 3.5. But I think Minnesota wins that game there. Those are two teams I want to see play for sure. I know what I'm going to get in Ohio State. I'm not sure with Nebraska, but I do want to see Michigan and Minnesota.
You talk about Harbaugh, but, man, I've been – I mean, even before he got to Minnesota, but P.J. Fleck, I've really enjoyed watching him and what he's done with that Minnesota program, Coach.
And he's got good players now. You know, Bateman's back at receiver. Morgan's a quarterback. They hired a guy to really work with him. I think that's a good football team.
Well, Coach, we got all the teams back in action this weekend, and then here in a couple weeks we'll get the Pac-12 back at it too, and so we'll look forward to that. But as always, thank you so much for the time, and will you be enjoying the Chiefs at Broncos on Sunday? Will you watch that game, Coach? Come on, Coach.
Take it easy on my guys. You know, they're beat up. Give us a chance. So.
No, Coach. We can't. Okay. We can't. After growing up with John Elway stomping on my heart as an 8, 10, 12, 14-year-old, no, it's payback time.
All right. Wow. Well, it probably is. It's been that way for a couple of years now. So I think you've got all the payback you need.
Nah, we're talking about the Broncos still, right?
Yeah, we are.
Okay. Yeah, just a little bit more. Hey, Coach, thank you for the time. We appreciate it.
All right, guys. Good to be with you.
That is Coach Gary Barnett. Now let's quickly check in with Vegas Jake Pounders. Very, very interesting. Coach, he didn't seem enthusiastic about it, Jake, but he did say, boy, you just feel like you got to take Nebraska with those 26 points. But he kind of said it begrudgingly. Jake Pounders, would you go with Nebraska and 4 touchdowns? How do you feel about that?
Oh.
Never thought I'd say it.
Oh. I don't feel great about anything in the Big Ten. Just because of
Maybe like Nate said, it's going to be unexpected, the first game, whatever. 26 points. They're just throwing points at
no,
you.
No, I think I'd still take Ohio State.
Mm.
I think they're going to lay Nate? A smackdown on them.
Well, he was saying that Ohio State wanted to play real bad because they had something to prove, but didn't Nebraska want to play real bad, too? They were saying they wanted to leave the Big Ten.
Right, but I think Coach is implying that there's something to play for Ohio State.
You're saying Nebraska didn't have anything to play for, Jake?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that there's probably
not. Oh, no, buddy.
Yeah, there's zero chance that they make it to the college football playoffs. That's what I'm saying.
What if they win this game, and then all of a sudden they're thrust into the top 25?
I'll take that bet. If you want to bet, you're talking about Vegas, Jake. Vegas, if you want to play the money line with Nebraska?
You want me to take Nebraska 35 points?
Nope.
That's what
you said. What if they go in there and win?
They do, but if you're asking me to bet on Nebraska, give me 35 points.
Right.
35.5.
Right.
35.5.
Nope. That's probably around the. I'd say 30. It would take
Nate's
at least
done?
30 for me.
Does it look like he's done? He'll give me 35.5, and we'll call it a bet.
No,
he doesn't look like he's ready for that.
Teofimo got me right, and I'm going to try to stay right. All right, Teofimo got me right last weekend. I'm trying to stay right.
What's the money line on Habib? Are you going to get involved in that at all? Since this combat sports seems to be your thing now with your wagering, you gonna?
I don't know.
There's not much to be made.
I'm very hesitant to make any bets. I see my account is like in the green.
You know what? It's not value, but it just seems like that's a sure thing, you know?
Just to throw something on it?
Just padding, padding your stats is all you're doing there.
Hmm.
So, hey, by the way, is it a surprise at all that Teofimo says he's not going to do a rematch with
He might,
Loma?
But, you don't want to come out and say that.
Okay.
Because
make him earn it.
You want money?
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Look, here's the deal. When you're the champion, it's up to the champion and his management to make sure there is something called a rematch clause whenever you defend your title, if they're taking care of you, or if they're not overconfident and arrogant. So either they were incompetent in not having a rematch clause in the contract, or they were so arrogant they didn't think that they would lose to Teofimo Lopez. So that's on them.
Mm. Yep.
They don't have a rematch clause.
Wow.
And Teofimo, for a while, has been struggling to get down to 135. And so, it's a real option to go up to 140. But I suspect that there will be some demand for the rematch, especially now that you find out Lomachenko had minor shoulder surgery after the fight, but he still lost. If that's the best offer, that's what the promoters are telling him to do, he'll rematch Lomachenko. But if I was Lomachenko, I would not be very happy with my promoter or my management.
Yeah.
The fact that I didn't have a rematch clause in there.
Yes, that's all stuff I didn't understand. That makes a lot of sense. And I'd like to see it again because I thought it was such a good fight. You know, it was a fun chess match to watch. So I'd like to see a rematch. But yeah, it seemed like clearly they were a little arrogant. I mean, they were arrogant moving into that. And if he goes up a weight class, does he give up those belts then? Like, what happens to those belts has right now?
He would. Like, if he officially went up to 140 and declared and fought up there. I mean, like with him now, when you get to the point, I mean, they're already ranking him now in the top five pound-for-pound, fighters as far as all the pound-for-pound charts. That's ESPN just had him at five or six. So now, whenever he fights now, it's a big-money fight, and he's fighting for titles. If he moves up to 140, and he has to go back, and he can work out deals with the governing bodies, like, hey, give me an exemption here so I don't have to make my mandatory within your time frame. I'm going to move up to 140, try to win a title there, and then I can come back. I mean, you can bounce back and forth, but likely, if he goes up to 140, you wouldn't think he'd go back to 135 because of his frame and how young he is. I mean, he could be a welterweight. He could be 147 if he wanted to be, and I think carry it pretty well. Remember Lomachenko, from the start of his career, moved up two divisions to 135, where Teofimo's been at. And so, Canelo's moved up a few divisions, so that's only natural. But I still think the most likely opponent for Teofimo will be a rematch. But if he moves up, he moves up, especially now Lomachenko. You got to see when's he going to be available after having the minor shoulder surgery. He may not be ready to go to start training again until January. We will take a break back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.